I'm Graham Aubrey. You're listening to The Bike Show on Resonance FM.
Oh, do you want to let Marks and Spencers go?
You're listening to... You're listening to Resonance FM. Because you're with it. Because you're with it. No. I've taken it too far now.
Taken it too far.
That's not me. Imagine me what I'm like when I drink beer.
Welcome to The Bike Show here on Resonance FM, London's art radio station, with me, Jack Thurston. Being the 1st of October today, perhaps we can call this the autumn season. Anyway, it's good to be back for the next 6 weeks on your airwaves. And with autumn upon us, this is a good moment to take a look back over the summer of cycling. How's it been for you? And I don't mean watching the Tour de France and the Olympics on the telly box, thrilling though that was at times. No, I mean your actual summer of getting out on the bike and riding. How has it been? Did you take part in the People's Grand Tour with Lionel Burney? Did you do anything particularly epic or memorable? Did you go cycle camping, perhaps? Did you find any new routes or reacquaint yourself with a familiar, well-loved place? Well, I hope it was good, whatever you were doing on the bike. For my part, I've been doing quite a lot of riding because I've been working on a book project all about the best places to ride a bike in London and the South East. More about that and how you can be a part of that project later on in the show. But first, we turn to bike polo and an evening a couple of weeks ago at the Design Museum down on the banks of the River Thames at Tower Bridge, where I was invited very kindly of the Design Museum to invite me to host a series of conversations about different aspects of cycling and design. It was a really fascinating evening, and it was a sellout, which was a great success for the Design Museum. And upstairs in the room that I was hosting, I had a series of conversations, and the first was with Todd, Matt and Rupert of Cosmic Bike Polo, a team that's one of the best teams in London, Europe and the known universe, or so they would have you and me believe. I don't know where you first heard about bike polo, but for me it was when I was reading Patrick Lee Fermor's book, Between the Woods and the Water. He was, of course, walking across Europe in the early 1930s, and one of the episodes involves him being roped into playing a game of bike polo somewhere on the remote plains of Moravia, which I guess is in Slovakia these days. And it's quite an amusing account of a rough and tumble with a bunch of Austro-Hungarian counts on their bicycles playing polo. Of course, a couple of decades earlier, bicycle polo was a demonstration sport in the London Olympics of 1908, and it's still played all around the world. However, as I was quick to learn in my conversation with Cosmic Bike Polo, the bike polo with the very long history is the grass court version, and that's quite different to the hard court version that the Cosmic guys play. Anyway, we begin at the beginning with Todd explaining how this new sport first came to London.
It was messengers in the late 90s, typically Seattle and Portland, that pretty much picked it up, and it'd be something to do between jobs. Over here in London, it wasn't until 2007, a group of friends that had met on an internet forum had seen it in New York and decided that it would be a great idea to get together and actually start playing. That was only 5 years ago, and they were playing with broom handles with bits of wood stuck on the end and golf clubs. So I'm not sure if anyone saw some of our equipment when they came through the door, but it's actually progressed quite a lot in 5 years.
We're more mid-school.
Yeah, I mean, I remember covering the early days of bike polo in London on the radio show, and observing the way in which it was played seemed quite genteel, quite tentative, sort of quite balletic in a way. And then a couple of years later, going along to watch a game, and it's fast and furious. I mean, completely different in terms of the gameplay. But before we get onto the gameplay, let's just quickly, in a word, go through the rules.
It's three aside. The simple rule really is you can't put a foot down. If you put a foot down, you have to sort of, effectively, you're out of the game, so you have to sort of tap into the side of the court to get back into the game. We all obviously play with a mallet, and there's only one way to score a goal, which is actually on the end of the mallet head. And we traditionally were playing first to five. So the first team that scores five goals ends the game. I mean, that's pretty much the simple terminology for how a game is. There are a lot more rules in terms of, you know, making the game a bit safer, making it a bit more dynamic. But a lot of that is kind of details that we're still kind of etching out every time we have a tournament, every time the global scene gets together, we start to kind of really work on the details. But the fundamentals has always been first to five, no foot down, and simple rules in terms of safety have been, you know, but like to like, really.
But that's the interesting thing about what's happening, is that we're playing at the top level and we're dictating how the future's coming to bike polo. So the grass court was very much influenced by horse polo. Mm. And that was, the way they play is very much as if you were riding a horse on grass, and they took that influence. And the influence from grass polo to hard court is almost, there is no influence. Hardcourt was built around the idea of playing together 3v3, because that was the size of the court we had available. That's the maximum amount of players you can get on the court comfortably. Gradually, the sport is changing, and like you said, it may have seemed balletic at the beginning, and then it seems to have got a bit more aggressive and physical. But what's happening now is that our control and our skill sets of developing over those 5 years, because no one can play.
One of the fundamental changes was a lot of us were riding fixed gear to start with, because as Todd said, you know, the heritage in hardcore was it came from a courier background, and a lot of couriers were riding fixed gear, so they were just using the bikes that they had, so fixed gear, no brakes. So when it came to Europe, or it came to London, there was a big craze on fixed gear culture, and a lot of us, to be fair, did get into it through that. But then when we started to play the game, we got more involved, we realised that actually fixed gear brakeless was quite foolish. you know, created a lot of accidents, and also you were kind of prevented to how far you could push yourself skill-wise. So then gradually someone went, well, why don't I try free wheel? Oh yeah, I'll try free wheel. And then more people tried free wheel, and then it was like, well, if I'm going to try free wheel, I'm going to have to get a brake. One brake, two brakes, and it gradually evolves like that. And that's where, I mean, you see our bikes lined up at the back, and that's kind of where we're at right now, although they're still in the midst of change. So it's very interesting to see the evolution in the last 3 or 5 years from when you saw it to where it is now.
And so in terms of the gameplay, you know, what are the strategic elements that
we haven't got long enough to talk about that.
Well, that's developing a lot as well. You if you saw the World Championships this year in Geneva, and then you compared it to last year in Seattle and the year before in Berlin, you'd see a huge improvement in team play, and it's getting much better to spectate on bike polo. It used to be a very individual sport, and it used to be three great players playing on the court, picking up where another player made a mistake. But at the moment, it's moving into an area where each team has a character that they show in their tactics and the way they move around the court. And you can really follow a team through a tournament now and see them evolve through the tournament in conserving energy some games giving all they have, and watching these teams with characters matching up against each other. And it's becoming a real spectacle for spectators to watch.
Can I bring in Todd to talk about the your team's own approach to winning games?
Well, that has kind of changed over the years. I mean, we're kind of one of the longest serving teams now in the UK, in Europe, yeah. But originally, we were kind of feeding off this kind of cosmic team name, so we felt we were going to somehow be guided, and we could just we could
by
just
the gods, I think,
yeah
it?
We could try and just, I mean, we've always been obsessed with bicycles, and Matt is from a BMX background, so he became like the crazy guy who would ride his bike like a BMX, and we'd start just kind of almost like bringing elements of our bike backgrounds into the sport. So we were doing wheelies and hitting the ball underneath, and we were doing bunny hops, and somehow that has actually become quite a key part in the game. But it soon dawned on us that we had to start thinking of real team play. So, you know, this it's almost a sport. I mean, it's something developing, but sport has played a big factor. For the Europeans, I think we look a lot to football and that kind of tactical play, whereas the Americans look typically to ice hockey. So they play quite a different game to us, and all of a sudden we've kind of mixed together, and evidently this year at the World Championships there was two completely different styles of play. It was really interesting.
How did that work out in terms of who was
Europe winning? Won. Yeah, Europe were the first time ever to be crowned world champions, so you know, just well, I'm not saying it shows that that tactic's right, but I think there's a balance now in the game to what can be achieved. But there are still two sides to polo. There is the sort of competitive aspect, which is what the team represents through the tournaments that we go to all over the world. I mean, we have to remember that polo is still quite a small community. I mean, London has the largest community, and we have a league, which we do in the winter, which again adds a competitive play. But normal day-to-day polo is just friends throwing mallets into a court and just playing mixed polo, where there is the competitive side drifts away. So there is still this influence of the community aspect and a bit more of a lifestyle coming through, which is kind of, I think, why polo is still quite unique, and why this is not conflict, but is it a sport or is it still a social release to ride a bike or hang out with some friends? So there's a lot of different elements to it.
And do you find that people are coming along just to watch? Because when in the early days, it seemed to me that people were going along and they were playing and then watching when they weren't playing. Mm. But do you have kind of, you know, spectators? Has it reached a level where people go along to watch because it's just great?
Only at the tournaments, when the tournaments are advertised.
You have to understand, we're playing in some of the least desirable locations in London. So if you were to watch and stand still for too long, you wouldn't, you know, it's not somewhere you would hang around unless you were playing polo. Some of the places we're playing,
you haven't got the hot dog sorted.
No,
not yet. No,
unfortunately,
we've become accepted as because we turn up regularly and we keep the courts clean, and we're a benefit to these areas the way we keep the courts and play them.
Yeah, I mean, has there been any kind of friction with the people who are using them? Because these are courts that were used for football, basketball. You know, and still are, presumably.
Well, I mean, if we look at the history of like London bike polo, it kind of started in an area called Brick Lane, which most people know of, because there was a spare court and it became a bit of a social activity. But the court was never very good for bike polo, but it was a bit of a derelict basketball stroke football court. And then as the game progressed, we started to look for other courts that were a bit more suited. And that did push us slightly out of, the more visible area, because Brick Lane has got a big tourist attraction. A lot of people pass by and were watching it, probably where you first saw it. But then when it moved to more relevant courts, we started to find courts in council estate areas or backbeat of East London where you wouldn't be passing by. You'd have to go there to play. And most of these courts, unfortunately, weren't being used. I mean, we all know that, unfortunately, a lot of the younger generation aren't necessarily out there using these courts. So there's a lot of spare courts going. So we took over a lot of these, and in some respects we put a life back into them, but we did cause a bit of discomfort with some of the locals because we're turning up creating a little bit of noise on a regular basis, but generally speaking, you know, we're mature enough to communicate what's going on, and I think people enjoy us being there.
Should we talk for a minute about the bikes themselves and how they've changed? You sort of alluded to that with the move to free wheels, brakes, that kind of thing. Is there a bike that we should have up here for a little bit of a walking demo? Go on, Todd, bring one up. Because this is bike speed design. So I was impressed. I have to say, I don't know whether this bike's got it, but the brake lever that operated both the front and the rear. Okay, yeah, nice. I see you've got that. What do you think are the most important features of a polo bike, of this polo bike?
This bike was actually built especially for me. It was pretty much the first custom-built bike at the time. That was over a year ago. We've kind of moved on from the typical kind of track bike feel, but still capturing a lot of the tight geometry.
And what's the purpose of that?
Well, actually, when you're playing here, okay, here in London, we play on quite small courts, so it's important to have a really short wheelbase so we can do small circles. So we're kind of playing really fast and tight, so the wheel's tucked well under the saddle.
Yeah, yeah. And you've obviously got the very low gearing.
Yeah,
it's very noticeable when you see somebody who's just riding to or from a bike because they're kind of going like this, as well as having the mallet tied to their...
Well, that's it. It's like spot the polo player, because it's literally... and you're not going very far. But that's the way you play on the court, because you can keep your balance and you can like act really quickly.
And so the brakes here, this is what I was mentioning just now, quite interesting. You'll be able to see there's two sets of brakes, but only one brake lever.
Okay, if I just turn this around here, you can see right now both the brakes are wired up to one lever. Originally, we were custom making brake levers ourselves and adapting them so they could run two cables. Now there's a company, this is Paul Components, they're actually making a custom built double lever. I've got a disc front and a V-brake rear.
Does that create any difficulties that you have to solve?
No, not really. I mean, I've
the
kind
same
of...
amount of cable pull, is it?
I've kind of had every setup so far apart from, like, hydraulic, and this is currently, you know, what's working for me.
Yeah. Anything to add on? What's he got wrong? What he could improve?
Todd's bike is incredible, but but what's interesting to note, I think, is that like none of this equipment exists. Like, this is all Todd's creation, and every polo bike is spent hours, and people have spent hours thinking about how to create these bikes. And you look at the geometry, and you've just got to tread that fine line between maneuverability and stability. You want to be able to get around these 40 meter by 20 meter courts as fast as possible, and you know, just everything wherever you want to go, you have to be able to get there on this bike. But at the same time, you've got people trying to stop you getting there, smashing into your shoulders, doing anything they can to prevent you, and you've got to try and have a really stable base as well. So it's a really tough bike to design, but somehow a group of people who've got no background in bike design, we really have done it, and we've got to the point now where there's a consistent geometry among polo bikes. So I think it's been an amazing journey over the past 2 years to see this arrive and to see that we've done it for ourselves, because no one else is doing this.
It has
no one
else is doing it for us. Trial and error, you know, working out what geometry works good for each other, working out what size fits, because again, there was nothing you could take off the peg. I mean, we all have very different riding styles as well, and our style influences our bike setup quite a lot. So when you look at the different bikes there, you know, we can run you through why it's a certain way for each one of us. You know, I think it'd be very hard to take one bike and say it fits everyone, because everyone's got a different style, and on the court you've got a different position and a different active role, and the bike reflects that. But there's still little details, you know, for example, I'm running still on a 700C, which I guess was a bit from the heritage of riding fixed, and that bike that I've got there was one of the first sort of custom off-the-peg bikes, as it were. But you'll see now that people are starting to work on 26s because it's quicker, it's tighter, and it's a bit more relevant for the courts they're playing on. So there's still this variation of what fit for purpose, really.
I think if you do take a look at the bikes on the way out, you'll see an interesting development in that if you look at Matt's bike, which has the bigger wheels, the 700C wheels on the left, that's a bike, that's a frame that you can buy, that's a frame that you can purchase off the peg, and he's appropriated it as best as he can to fit the sport, and it works very well. But when you move over and you look at Todd and my bikes, we've been in a position where we can create our own bikes, and you'll see them kind of morph and change, and the wheels get smaller and the frames get tighter and the angles get a bit steeper, and you'll see where the design has come in, and you really see the kind of polo bike forming.
It's only really now, isn't it, this year, that people really start to focus on the actual design of the bike. It's literally, it's been about adapting something that's already existed.
And
now it's about physically designing
it. Is that something that you do because, you know, you want to do it and you're curious and you're in the sport, or because it helps you win games?
Bit of both. I mean, we're all doing it because we love bikes. If we didn't love bikes, we wouldn't be playing bike polo. it's definitely also come from the fact that we want to get better, we want to progress. And, you know, like Todd mentioned, you know, I've come from a background in BMX, and, you know, I've seen how that's evolved. And I guess, sort of being a part of this, you have an influence on it.
So where do you see the sport, if we can call it a sport, tentatively going? You know, are you bringing up the UCI and saying, you know, can we come in?
Not yet. I think the drinker would have to stop first.
I think it's an interesting question. We want it to be a sport. Like, we don't take it too seriously, but we think about it as a sport, and we think about it as more than just a pastime, and we want it to evolve, but it isn't recognised at all by any UCI people yet. But if it were to happen, we'd welcome it. But there is obviously a faction within bike polo that still like it to be a social scene, but it can be both, and one doesn't have to eclipse the other. I think it needs to happen. It needs to become a sport for it to continue to grow. Otherwise, there isn't much more that the top level can get from it.
And so, well, let's talk a bit towards the end, as we're wrapping up, move on to the next discussion, about not people who are at the top level, not you guys. What about people who see this and think, oh, I missed the boat. I should have been here in 2007, and then I could be where these guys are. Can you? Is there still entry-level bike polo?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, very much so. I mean, you know, polo is a very open game. I mean, it's... Yeah, we have all sorts of people, sorts of background, different ages. Unfortunately, a lot of the younger generation are only, you know, still in their mid-20s, so it's not too young. But, you know, anyone can play, and there's still an open way to get involved. And when we have a bike association called the London Hardcourt Bike Polo Association, which you can find out a bit more about London bike polo. There's also the Bike Forum, where you can find out. And you can turn up at any of the courts in London, and we also have a beginner's...
On a Saturday morning at London Fields in Hackney, there is a beginner's session where you can come and play, and someone will lend you a bike and help you out, and there'll be a few more advanced players there, but on your side, trying to help you get to grips with the sport. And that also happens on a Monday night at SE1 Harper Road. But also, you look at those bikes, you don't need one of those bikes to play. Like, that's what we've done because we're obsessed with bikes in the game, and that's what we want to do. But there are people at the top level who are playing on bikes which are, you could buy off the peg, but we think they would play better on a polo bike. But you can do it, and the majority of people do it, so you don't need to go to all these lengths to play. You can play on anything. That's
and
important.
So, finally, maybe I can just ask you what you feel, it's a big question, but take your time, what you feel it is that you've got out of bike polo. What's different in your lives as a result of playing this new sport?
Well, I think even as the game progresses, it still has its roots of what happened 5 years ago, and you can still enter it, and you can treat it, you know, however you want to. So it can be a hobby, it can be a social life, it can be a sport, it can be your weekly activity. I mean, I suggest scrapping the gym and maybe picking up a bike and a mallet and maybe starting bike polo. There's so much to get out of it, and you can make so many friends and start your own bike polo groups, and it's just a really sociable thing to do. It's so much fun.
Is it going on outside London?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
all over the world.
Yeah.
I mean, in the UK, outside London.
Yeah. It's fast growing in the UK, partly thanks to a lot of national series tournaments. So there's scenes cropping up in every town, every city. So it's fast emerging in the UK.
And so, what do you feel like you've been getting out of it, Matt?
Oh, a lot of what Todd said, really. Yeah. I mean, it brings so much in terms of, you know, the physical side of it, the passion, the friendships, and, you know, the opportunity to be a part of something that's growing is great. I mean, you know, you're able to influence it, and you can make your mark on it.
Yeah, I mean, I started playing in Manchester when I was at university, and when I moved back down to London in 2009, it was all I had to do was really show up at a polo court and just make that horrible first step of going up to people and introducing myself. And it's tough right at the beginning because it looks like a really tough group of people to get involved with. But as soon as you're in and you're playing and you've got a passion for what's going on and you're not there to be, there's no fashion involved. This is just about playing polo. And if you want to play, then you will find just an amazing group of people who will help you out in any way to get going in the game. And those people exist worldwide. We travel all over the world to play polo. And we very rarely pay for a place to stay. People will put you up anywhere. So, I mean, it's just an amazing global social scene revolved around this little sport, which has grown rapidly. And it's something, now is the time to get involved, I think, if people want to do it.
Great. Well, Rupert, Matt, Todd, Cosmic Bike Polo, thanks very much.
Thank you.
I was in conversation with Todd, Matt and Rupert of Cosmic Bike Polo, and that was at the Design Museum's Bike v Design Night. And next week on the show, we'll hear more from those conversations with a very revealing chat about the state of affairs in the British bike industry with Nick Larson, who's the founder and head of design at Charge Bikes. Well, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I'm working on a book about where to go cycling in London and the South East. And I've been spending many days and a few nights out on the road, finding the most beautiful, quiet country lanes, the best picnic spots, the friendliest country pubs, and all the many things that make cycling in the English countryside such an enormous pleasure. I've got what I believe to be a fantastic set of routes lined up, from short routes that are good for an after-work spin or a leisurely day ride, to more adventurous excursions. And as happy as I am with the routes, I would like to be able to say, that they have the stamp of approval of listeners to the bike show, a select and very discerning group of cyclists, if ever there was one. So if you'd like to be a route tester, please get in touch. All that requires is that you ride one of the routes. I'll give you the instructions. And you need to check that it makes sense and that the directions would be easy to follow for somebody else. And if you can think of improvements either to the route or to the way it's described, then I'd love to hear them. And of course, anyone who helps will get a free copy of the book when it comes out next spring. So drop a line to me, bikeshow@resonancefm.com, or by using the contact link on the Bike Show website, www.thebikeshow.net, and let me know that you're willing to help, and I will give you further instructions by email, and I'll be very grateful, of course. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. It's great to be back on the air. Until the same time next week on Monday evening at 6:30. Goodbye.